So, I'm not projecting it. So just a few comments about last Chabura, and then we'll have a short Chabura today, because I just want to finish up some stuff from yesterday and wrap up Ein Danin Dinei Knesset BeBavel. Well?
Can I just find Jonathan
till 3:30? Till 3:30? No, not even close.
I'm
Let me just say our next sugya is the sugya on Yud Zayin, because this is it for the first part. A very nice sugya of Basar Meikara's Linan or Basar Lavasova's Linan. So we'll do that sugya on Yud Zayin, and then we're going to move to the Mishnah on Yud Tes about Shein Varegel Bershut Sarabim and Tashlumei Hana. So we'll do that little sugya there until Chaf Aleph. So that's the game plan, those are the next two sugyas. So yesterday we discussed the Machlokas of Palganizka Knasa versus Palganizka Mamona. The Gemara explained the machlokas about that the machlokas turns on whether Shtam Shvarim are Bechezka Shimor or La Bechezka Shimor. This seemed to pose a double problem, because on the assumption that a Shor is Bechezka Shimor, right, so what does that mean? So it means you shouldn't have to pay anything, and yet there's a Knas. So the one question is, well, why would you knas the guy if he didn't do anything wrong? Right? Why would you try to knas him to motivate better shmira if the shor is becheska shimor? And then we have the question for the other daya, which is, if a shor is la becheska shimor, meaning the guy breached his duty, so why would you give him a discount? Right? Why is the Torah chasale if he did something wrong? We don't do that for other nezikin. So the suggestion that I offered on Monday, is that in most cases of Nezikin, there are certain facts that we know about the Shor Hamazon. And that means that either you didn't breach your duty or you did breach it. Here, the Machlokas is about some Shvarim, not about this Shor. So what's the average Shor's behavior? And the point is that the statistical knowledge about Sam Shvarim doesn't bear directly on the nature of this particular shor. So, yes, if Sam Shvarim are lav b'cheska shimor, then we know that generally a shor doesn't require shmira, but it may be the case that your shor does. And so you have breached not a specific duty with respect to your shor, but a more general duty, a weaker duty, based off your knowledge of Sam Shvarim. And that's why it's sufficient to give rise to a knas, to deter you such that you will exercise greater shmira with your shor. And in the opposite direction, if stam shvarim are la b'cheska shimor kaimi, that they're not domesticated, so the facts known about average shvarim is that they do require shmira, so even though Akati lo yayature, even though you don't have a specific duty with respect to your shor, sorry, I said this backwards. If stam shor is beches kashmira, that's a general fact about stam shvarim. So based off those general facts, you wouldn't be required to pay. But since that doesn't tell you anything about the nature of your shor, it's conceivable that we should hold you liable. Can I get that backwards? Okay. So the point is that so the mamon sad is that even if stam shvarim are la b'cheska shimor kaimi, so the facts known about stam shvarim are such that you should be fully liable to pay, that doesn't tell you anything directly about your shor, about whether your shor is not b'cheska shimor.
That's why
chas rachman ale. So the point is that there's a conceptual difference between liability that arises from facts known about your shor, it's a mu'ad, versus a much weaker kind of liability that arises from facts known about stam shvarim. That sound good to everybody? I think that's the best explanation for why the Torah be chasalei, even though stam shvarim are la b'cheska shimor kaimin. Selter, it sounds good? Now,
L'chor, that, remember, that also explains why even though a stam shor is b'cheska shimor, will be willing to knas you ki hechi dilanatre l'ture. Right? Even though if in general you don't have a chiyav shmira, facts known, those general facts about stam shvarim are not sufficient to get you off the hook for your shor, so we knas you. So I think that's one way of making sense of this idea, that even though we paskin palga nizka knasa, there are still echoes of mamonis within palga nizka knasa. And that's in contrast to the suggestion that there are aspects of mamonis in palga nizka knasa simply because you're not paying more than the value of the damages. Okay, why do I insist on that? Because on the latter view, the mere fact that you're not paying more than the value of the nezek shouldn't be relevant if the mazik is not liable for the carrying damages. So you can't say that palga niska knasa has aspects of mamon simply because you're paying less than the damages, not more than the damages. If you're not liable to pay anything, then even the half damages should be considered to be a knas. Does everybody see that? Well, so on Monday we were talking about the evidence that suggests that palga niska knasa has aspects of mamonis, right? As my father's suggestion.
Yeah.
And so the question is, what gives rise to that idea? So one way of formulating it is it's just the fact that palga niska is less than the keren. It's up to or equal to the keren, not above the value of the keren. Right, and stam knasos are marked by the fact that they're more than the keren, kefel, dalet, behei, etc. My point is that that observation is not sufficient to establish palga niska as a quasi mamon, because if you're not obligated to pay for those damages, then even the chatzi nezek is above the mazik's liability. You see that? So it's not about whether the compensation falls within the scope of the damages, it's about whether the compensation falls within the scope of the mazik's liability that determines whether it's knas. You see that? So that's why I think that the mere observation that this is keren is not sufficient to say that this is a different kind of a knas. That's my point. So that what then would explain why this is treated as a rule-breaking knas that's closer to mamon? It's the fact that the Gemara's claim of stam shvarim b'chezka shimor is a claim about facts known about an average or a statistical average about shvarim, not about this particular shor. Right? So it may be that you did breach a duty with respect to the shor, given its character. So that explains why palga niska knasa has shades of mamon, not the mere fact that the tashlumin falls within the scope of the nezek. That's the important point I want to make. And that's where I think my view contrasts with the way my father formulates it. Because he formulates it more in terms of, like the way it sounds in the Rishonim, it's the fact that it's karna, that you're paying within the scope of nezek, that explains why it's quasi-mamon. Isaac, you have something to say, or...?
I mean, we know that your father says things that generally father had something else.
So you're saying this is just an explanation for that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. But you see the point that I'm getting at. Let me try to buttress this point by contrasting Tosfos' interpretation on Tesvav of Stam Shvarim La Bechezka Shimur with the Tosfos Rids quoted in the Shitnok Batzos there. So on Tesvav Mebeis, the Gemara has this idea Hashta de Amris Palga Nizka Knasa Hai Kalba de Achla Shunra. Right? It's Knasahu and Lo Magvinam Bebavel. Sound familiar? So Tosfos has a very interesting point. Why does the Gemara preface this discussion with Hashta de Amris Palga Nizka Knasa? What about the Manda Amar Palga Nizka Mamon? So Tosfos says, if you held Palga Nizka Mamon, that means you're committed to Stam Shvarim La Bechezka Shimur. Right? And if Stam Shvarim are La Bechezka Shimur, then it turns out that your cases of keren, negicha, are all cases of urche, not cases of mishuna.
Right? Because if sam shvarim are lava cheska shimor, then it sounds like it's within the nature of a shor to gore something.
And we're all acknowledging that's a shor.
Yeah, right. You don't have to commit to it.
We'll see. So this rid doesn't commit to it, but the point here is the Gemara says Hashu Damris Palgan Niska Knasa Hai Kalba Daachla Shunra Mishunehu, and therefore you pay Chatzin Nezek whatever. Tosus's point is that that only makes sense. Karen is only Mugdar as Mishune on the assumption of Palgan Niska Knasa, because then it's Bechezka Shimur, and yet it acted aberrantly. Right, it acted deviantly relative to the normal nature of Shvarim. But if you held Palga Niska Mamona, which means Sam Shomar Labacheska Shimur, this is normal behavior for the animal, and you wouldn't be able to show that Mishuna is normally Chayev Chatzi Nezek. That's Tosos' argument. So the point that I want to take away from Tosos is just that Tosos has a very strong reading of the machlokas of Palga Niska Knasa versus Palga Niska Mamona, on the assumption that Palga Niska Knasa, Karen is at the shore, acts strangely, because the nature of this shore is to act domesticatedly, and it deviated from that, to a fishernet. But on the assumption of Palga Niska Mamona, it's the nature of the shore to act wildly, and this negicha was consistent with its nature. So you see that Satosis thinks that stam shvarim b'cheska shimur
will determine whether the animal is acting both in mishuna or bat or b'orche.
So it seems like Tosis makes the jump from saying something about stam shvarim to the behavior of this particular shor in question. Shita Gubetzes, quoting the Rid, disagrees. And he says, here he's quoting the Riva, I guess.
Orche is also a comment about the general shore.
Well?
Orche is also a comment about the general shore. Not about this particular shore.
In Tosos?
This thing, the animal, relation to Moshe Shvarim.
Yeah, it's possible. But contrast that with Tosos' Rid. You'll see why the contrast brings out this point. Riva, Omer, Dafilu, Manda, Amar, Palga, Niska, Mamona, Mikri, Karen, Mishuna. How do you understand this writ, citing the Riva?
It's not that he actually sort of agrees with Tosos' premise that Mishuna should reflect upon whether or not it's Chesed Shimur. He just thinks it's not fully Mishuna.
Right. That's the point I want to make.
That's almost like Messias type of a point.
Well,
it's like my whole Messias between the writ and Tosos, that's like how Mishuna is. But they both agree that, like,
whether Stam Shor is Bechezka Shimur.
Like, it seems they agree completely except, like, the day.
So I take this writ as saying that even if it's Mamona, even the view that holds this Mamona
doesn't mean that every Shor is domesticated. Right? So it's not making a hard case that every Shor is domesticated and therefore this is sarcastic. It's not, even if you call this Mamona, it's not making a hard case that every shore is wild. It's just making some more generic case about the Sam shore is wild, but that's consistent with this shore acting both in Mishuna. Right? Because the claim of Sam Shore and Bechezka Shimur doesn't mean, it's not a hard fact that all Shvarim act this way, and therefore it acted the old Vanishuna. See the point? So, according to the Rid, the Gemara's claim about Sam Shvarim La Bechezka Shimur is not a hard fact about every Shor. About the nature of every shore. Because it's consistent with the animal still acting, with the animal's warren being the shaman. It's so strange behavior.
So all I would say is that that's just a question as to whether or not how animals generally act is an important question for the categories of orphan and shaman. But that's poorly phrased. That
is true.
The question of a shimor is a question of what rights does an owner have to assume that it's not going to damage. I have the right to leave it alone and not guard it. That's not inherently connected to what type of damage.
But notice how he says mishunet. It's mishunet bal yom, mishunet bal kaf. So I don't think it's about the rights of the owner versus the behavior.
I agree. The Ritz buying into Tosos's point that they are connected. And the only thing he's disagreeing with is he's saying, even though you might want to say that since Islam has kashimur, therefore there should be mishuna, but CNT is not that different from what they normally do, so therefore it's not the mishuna koka. It's just like a Messias point. It's like not a very valuable point.
Uh-huh. So I agree that it's a Metzias point, but I think it's valuable in teasing out the two different ways of learning Stam Shvarim Bechezkas or La Bechezkas Shemur.
That evaluation of Stam Shvarim, it's just mitigating. It's like even when you're talking about the general thing that all Shvarim do, just know that this specific action isn't so Mishuna for Stam Shvarim. It's a little Mishuna for Stam Shvarim. But it's still an assessment about all Shvarim in general, what they do.
Mm-hmm. So I thought you could read this as saying that the idea of Stam Shvarim is about Stam Shvarim, but that doesn't necessarily bear on the behavior of this shore.
I completely agree. That's a great,
and so it's consistent great, with this shore still acting both in Mishuna.
That's a great point to make. I don't think there is anything at all. I don't know where you see that at all. If anything, it sounds just like he agrees with Tosos, and this is my focus on Tzias. The point you're making is an interesting one. And oh, maybe it's only like, oh, Mishuna, because we have instances where people don't wear Shvarim,
right.
Do it, even if generally they do. So therefore, it can't be fully Mishuna. I agree, that's cool. But that's not what Riz is saying.
Yeah, why do you think he's not saying that?
Because he just says, he doesn't really say much at all. He just says that it's in Mishuna Kokah. He doesn't say anything about, like, for this particular shore, it's in Mishuna Kokah.
Right, so I'm reading that into the distinction between...
But he doesn't make a distinction between Stam Shvarim and this particular
right.
Shore.
That he doesn't have.
He doesn't have
let's put it this way. My distinction would explain the distinction that Tosus Rid has.
Sure, but like you don't have someone to say, but you're trying to bring the Rid as a right for
how would explain it? He's making a relational point that this thing is not so Mishuna, but it is somewhat Mishuna. How can that be a particular shore thing? Like, with respect to this particular shore that borders, nothing is Mishuna. Right? Mishuna has to be a relation to Stam Shvarim.
Say it again?
Mishuna has to be a relation to Stam Shvarim. It can't be about this particular shore. It can't be like, this shore with respect to itself is somewhat different, but not...
Why can't it be?
That doesn't make any sense. Like, with respect to myself, I'm not somewhat different, but not completely.
No, the question is, has this shore acted out of character? Right?
How can a shore act out of character with itself?
It happens all the time, right? Stam case of a shore Tom is that it's domesticated. And it acts wildly.
Your whole argument is that a Stam case of a shore Tom doesn't bear on particulars of the shore.
Your statistical average about how Shvarim act wouldn't bear on your shore. That's my point. My point is that explains why, even though Stam Shvarim are La Becheska Shimor, nevertheless, this shore's actions are still considered to be Mishuna. Right? That's the point that I'm making. And the reason for that is because the Gemara's issue, so Mishuna versus Urche is relative to this shore, whereas the Kviya of Stam Shvarim Beches Kashimur La Beches Kashimur is about Stam Shvarim. So that would explain Tosis Rid's distinction. That
I think I think you can understand Mishuna and Urche as not being in relation to like what general oxen do.
Why can't it be?
Okay, from an inaction, how are we going to decide what's Orfei and what's Mishuna?
Well, I have to figure out how does this animal usually behave? Does it usually gore people or does it not usually gore people?
Okay, I mean, my point is, But you bring me to court, my animal will score you.
Yeah.
Right? You claim it was Orfei, and I claim it was Mishuna. How are we supposed to decide which is right?
Let's look at the history of the animal.
No history of the animal.
So what does that mean there's no history?
The animal was born yesterday.
I mean, there's no history whatsoever?
Yeah, no history whatsoever. Stood up in court.
So maybe in that case you'd want to look to some chazaka, or you want to look to how other animals of its kind behave.
Right, that's the whole point. That's what Mishuna and Orfei is doing.
But that just means that in exceptional cases you would...
It's not an exceptional case. That's like a sound case of any kind of goring. You have to look at other cases of animal goring to see what is normal and what's not normal.
Sounds like only in a very specific case. You would acknowledge when there's a past history of the animal, you wouldn't look to what other animals do. Right?
Okay, I'm not sure.
Or you might say it's a general problem of robes. So let's say 60% of animals are la b'cheska shimor, but that doesn't tell us anything about whether your animal falls within the 60% or the 40%.
I agree with the distinction between the generic and the specific categorization. I'm just saying that, like, Mishuna and Orfei seem to be on that generic side. It seems to be trying to categorize animals' actions based on what those animals do.
So I'm just saying maybe that's not the case. Maybe the animal is b'cheskas tam until proven otherwise. And that's sufficient to establish that a negicha is mishuna, even if stam shor is la b'cheskas shimor. Why can't that be the case?
I just don't get it in both senses of mishuna. Like, I get it on the odd read that, like, if there's an attenuation between b'cheskas shimor and mishuna, or la b'cheskas shimor and mishuna. That somebody could be la b'cheskas shimor, but that doesn't mean that everything it does is the way that they damage.
Right. I mean, it could just be the kind of multi mechavero all of a raya that there's a presumption in favor of the animal owner until you could prove otherwise. So the burden of proof to show that it's mishuna would fall on the nizak. Just a presumption of non liability might settle that question.
Here he's saying that you can have cases of mishuna being tied up on the nizak, even on the
No, because it's not clear what would happen if the Kelev case, would he be chayev at all?
Yeah, according to the Rebbe, he'd be chayev in that case. I mean, the most material arrival was in the opposite direction, that the dog owner should be able to claim that an ox tom that gores is orphaned.
I don't think Tosus thinks that. I think Tosus' point is that a kalba wouldn't pay at all, according to Madamar Paganis Kamamona.
Right, so most of the raya would be that the owner of the sheep that got eaten by the dog would have to prove that an animal, that an ox that gores is Mishuna and not Orfei. That an ox that's Lava has got Shimor that gores. Not Orfei. If it were Orfei, then Tosus would be right, and then you have no basis for holding a dog liable that eats a sheep.
I think that's beyond our machlokas here. I mean, your point is you're just saying that there's no other way to establish Mishuna versus Orfei other than by appealing to Stam Shor. Right? That's your point?
Yeah.
And I'm saying, why can't you just define it relative to the past behavior of the animal? And if you don't have past behavior, then you have some sort of cheskas non-liability. And your answer is what?
Why is there a cheskas non-liability?
Because of a general principle of multimei chaver al baraya. We have to figure out how much liability is there. What do the rest of you think in this issue here? microphone could wake up now. Seltzer, you have thoughts on this, or?
Yeah, it's not like the generic specific thing. I mean, at least when it comes to Guad, right, it would seem that like Guadut is determined based on like a specific level of what it is to this particular
animal.
That would be something generic. And so when it comes to it being defined as a short time, I assume it also would be based on like the specifics of this animal, not the generics.
What about Orche and Mishuna? By the animal act.
Right, I mean, that is, seeing the distinction between time and Guad is also an Orche.
Orche versus Mishuna.
Well, Guad is paid full because it is considered Orche.
Yeah.
But time is Mishuna. Right. I'm assuming it's the same.
So you're closer to my camp?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that this, I think Liad's right, that I don't think this Tosas Rid is saying exactly the point that I'm trying to make, but I'm saying that my explanation explains the point that Tosas Rid is trying to make, and it clearly brings out the difference between this Tosas Rid idea about what's implied by Paga Niska Mamona Stam Shvarim La Bechezka Shimur, as opposed to what Tosos thinks is implied by Paga Niska Mamona and Stam Shvarim La Bechezka Shimur. That's the point I wanted to bring out with this. Alright? So, yes, on Monday, so we saw a few. I wanted to contrast the knas of Palga Niska Knossa with the knas from that we find in other places. In other places, it seems to be punitive, and here it sounds to be deterrent based. Kedila Natre is Ture. So we gave some examples of. I thought Tosas Rid on Daf Mem Vav was an example of a punitive knas, right? What did Tosas Rid there say, Isaac? Remember what he said? His lashon was something like, "We knas, according to Rabbi Lazar, we knas the owner of the shor muad." Yeah, kivan de avar, our of Nasan. He violated the principle of Rav Nasan that you shouldn't own a wild shor. So I just wanted to give another example here. The Rambam in Geneva Aleph Dalet, explaining the chiv of kefel, says that the ganav pays kefel so that he's mafsid kishir shabikish lachaser es chavero. So. So that he not merely is loose, it's not just that he's returning the stolen goods, but that he also suffers a loss himself. Question is, do you think this itself is deterrent based, or this sounds more punitive? Right here it sounds like almost, this is a standard case of Geneva, why a Gano pays kefil rather than Karen. Well?
This sounds punitive.
Yeah, my reading is that I thought this was punitive also. Right? Nimsa mafsid kishir shabigish lachasar eschaveiro. It's kind of a sense of justice that he's being punished to the degree that he was going to be mafsid eschaveiro. So then that's a nice way of bringing out again that our knas is different from at least a standard knas like kefel. Our knas is deterrent based and a knas like kefel is punitive based. Okay, then we saw and trying to flesh out the differences in halacha between our knas and other knasos. So we saw the Meiri citing the Ravid that generally modu b'knas is pater, but when it comes to Palga Niska knasa, modu b'knas would be chayiv. The Meiri took issue with that. So here I just wanted to look at the formulations of the Ravid, which we didn't see on Monday. We only saw the Meiri's quotation. So here we have two formulations. The Ravid on Daf Lamed Hey Amid Beis says ikashalach imkein modu b'knasu. So he's worried about a case where somebody acknowledges that their short time is mazik, and he says, doesn't that sound like modu b'knas? You should be pater. Lo dami hay knasa l'shar knasos dehacha karna hu demishalim vafilu kule karna lo. So Isaac, I think this undercuts your reading that keren was in the negicha sense, and he's saying because you're only paying keren and not even the full keren, you're paying less than keren. Uvedina kimodet zil shlim amrile. And when the fellow is modet, the bezdin tells him to go pay. The kol shekein itafas lo mafkinan mine. And not only does the bezdin tell the mazik to pay, not only do they do that, but bidyevet even itafas lo mafkinan. So this last line just explained, like, this is a quote from the Gemara. The Gemara says that even if there's no raya, but the mazik acknowledges, there's a chiyuv tashlumin because of this reason that you're only mishalim karna, v'afilu kule karna lo. So the question is, what's your sense in the reading of this Ravid? Do you have the sense of the Meiri's interpretation that this is only with respect to Tfisa and like a chiyuv latei sidei shemayim? That's the Beidina Kimode. Ubeidina kimode zil shlim amrilei, or is this meikra din that the bezin compels him to pay?
Sounds like
meikra din.
Oh,
the Meiri read this as just being a chiv bidei shemayim. He said, "Ma shekasvu shechetzi nezek bebezin omelo leich v'shalem im hude ela she'ein kofin oso." Masha ain't came bishar knasa shein onim lo shalem klal. So I mean, it's just an instruction. Well, so the bezin can't compel him to pay. Zil shlim is just a suggestion. Is that the?
Well, it's normally how they adjudicate, right?
All right, so is there any reason to think that he's limiting this to...
Go pay the same as your five.
What?
Did they say go pay or did they say your five?
Usually they say, you know, Ploni is chayiv.
Right. It is kind of the other
way. Now what?
Oh,
you think it's a weaker, it's like the eerie sense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know how Rishonim generally speak when we're talking about various cases, but...
Yeah, to me it sounds a little stronger. It sounds like Zil Shlim is that they think there is a real Chiyuv. I mean, look at this next Ravid. This is on Lamedala, where the Ravid makes a similar point. V'im Yishal HaShoel, Heichi Amar Rabbi Akiva, so Rabbi Akiva holds that in a case of a short time, it's Yuchlat HaShor, so they become Shutvin. So Hechem Rabbi Akiva Mishas Hanezek Havle Shutav. It's a very good point. How could they become Shutav Mishas Hanezek? V'hakaimelan Pagan Nizka Knasa V'chol Knasa Beidina Hud Machay V'lei. Right. So only Bezdin. This is one of the chilukim between Knas and Mammon, is that a Mammon is supposed to Achiv Mammon is supposed to exist Mishas Hanezek. Achiv Knas only exists Mishas Achiv Bezdin. So how could Rabbi Yehuda? How could Rabbi Akiva hold Yuchlat Hashor Mishas Nezek? If Palga Nizka is Knasa, and the liability can only go into effect once there's a Hamada Bedin. And he quotes the Gemara in Meruba, which says that Keren is Kein Shagana, but Kefel is Keshas Hamada Bedin. He says, Lo Kasha. Hasam, in the Keren and Kefel case, Leka Shutfusa. The Yosra Hudaka Mishalim. In the Kefel case, there are two distinctions. A,
there's no shitfus. In Palganiska Knasa, there's a shitfus that's generated in the shore. And secondly, in the Kefel case, you're paying more than the value of the Nezek.
Barachmana Amar Asher Yarshiyun Elohim. Havahacha Kivan de Shutfahu, Michi Asu Vaodua, Shorcha Hemis, Shoro Shoploni, Karna Hude Mechaivile. Vi Kadim Mode Vedina Namilo Miftar. Hilchach ki mesadi alei bebedina igloi milsa de meikara nami shutfahavu. So how do you understand this, Ravid? I mean, here too, he's saying that the knas of Palga Nizka is fundamentally different from other knasos like Kefel. What reason is there for that? How does he distinguish between the knasos? So he does mention, well, so that's consistent with what he says earlier, that it's more than the principle. But in addition to the Yosra, he has an important phrase where he says, the shutfus.
Isn't that descriptive?
What?
Isn't that descriptive?
He's saying there are two distinctions.
Isn't that the result of his distinction?
No, he's saying that usually a kanas is only generated by bezin like we find in the kefel case. He says, no, lo kasha, there's a distinction to be drawn. Hasam leka shutfa, in the kefel case there's no shutfus, it's just an obligation to pay. The yusra hu deka mishalim. And secondly, you're paying above the principal. So I take it that the Ravid is pointing to the fact that palga nizka knasa generates a shutfus in the shore, that shore tam is mishalim migufo,
to show that there's something different about the liability of palga nizka from shar knasos.
Question is, what's significant to the fact that there's a shutfus? That he doesn't really tell us. He's just using it as a way of bringing out the distinction between them. But Jonah, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it usually...
I mean, it is a good raya that it can't just be based off the Hamad Bedin, because we know that the shutfus is Misha Sanezek.
Right, that's what I was going to ask. This isn't like that. I mean, usually the knas has to be kind of ha. Right.
Right, that's his point, that by kefel, it's kishas Hamad Bedin, not kishas Hagneva.
Right.
Right?
So it's an instant knas.
But yeah, or he's saying you see from the fact that there's shutfas that this knas is really just conceptually different from the knasses that we find elsewhere. So it's not just a matter that this is like, I think a way of putting this is that it's not just that it's mammon based because it's less than the keren, but he thinks it's conceptually distinct as evidenced by the fact that there's shutfas in the shore. Now, if you think that the fact that there's shutfas in the shore is related to the fact that a shore tam is mishale migufo, and that itself is a kind of a deterrent that you run the risk of losing the asset, then you could read into this emphasis on shutfus that mishale migufo shows you that maybe there's more of a deterrent-based knas as opposed to a compensation-based or punitive-based knas. It's a possibility, but it's not so clear. Okay, so that was just the ha'ara on what distinguishes this knas from other knas according to the Ravid. The next hour I wanted to add to Monday's Chavura is, you'll recall, so one of the fundamental questions here is, what's the relationship between the knas of Palga Nizka and Shar Knasos? So usually we say that Ena Demorish Knas Lebanav, and also we saw in the Meiri that for Yisomim or for Ketanim, we're not going to be mamid and apetropis l'tam ligvos migufo. And he said, "Hoil v'chatzi nezek knasu ein elu b'toras knas." That we're not going to impose knasos on minors, just because it's the nature of something being a knas that it makes sense to apply it to a gadol, but it's not really fair. Or it's not appropriate to impose a knas on Ketanim. So I just thought it's interesting to point out, we saw this already, that there's the Rambam disagreed. The Rambam thought that, based off the Gemara on Lamed Tes, that's what the Sugi was, based on the Gemara on Lamed Tes, we do paskin Ma'amidin Apetropis L'Shor Tam Shel Yisomim. That was Machlokas Rambam Ravid and Iske Mamon Vav Dalid. So one way of explaining that Machlokas is that they're arguing about to what extent Palga Nizka Knasa is a real knas, in which case the Meiri's right of hol v'chatzi nezek knasu ein elu b'toras knas, or that but the Rambam would disagree and he would hold that palga nizka knasa has aspects of a chiyuv mamon, maybe for the same reason why moda b'knas would be chayiv according to the Ravid, and that's why this knas is shayach to impose upon ketanim or yisomim. So it could be the machlokas Rambam Ravid about whether your mamon apotropis liyisomim l'shor tam turns on whether palga nizka knasa is a knas in the true sense or whether it is aspects of a chiyuv mamon. Okay, and the third nafkamina between this knas and shar knasos that we saw is whether tfisa works. Remember, our Gemara and Tezvav Mebez says the itafas lo mafkinon minei. The Rush cited the Maharam, cited the Yad Ramah that Tfisa only works on this knas because it's less than the value of the nezek. So he said, Chiyav du leila nizak takanta v'karna v'lo lifsed mamone. Aval arvuche midi mamone d'achrin lo takinule. So that's the Yadarma thought that there's a special takana to allow a nizak from a short tam to collect palga nizka so that he doesn't lose his karen. Now the Rush disagreed, and he said, "Velo nirali delav takanta hi aladina hu mitimidaraisa mechayev le ela she'ena ledayin bebavo shiachafuna liten lo b'chol ki agavna avirinish dina lenavshe velo mafkina mine adiyayev called mechuyev le midaraisa." So you notice there's machlokas between the Yad Rama and the Rush about whether this din is midrabanan, takanta midrabanan, or a din d'oraisa. According to the Rush, the zchus tfisa here is a din d'oraisa, based off avedinish dina lenafshe. So the question is, how do you understand the machlokas and the Yad Rama and the Rush here? And do you think that this position of the Rush applies to all knasos, or is it limited to this knas? So if you take the Rush as being a rule about all knasos, there's a huge chiddush here, because usually we think that a knas requires a bezdin to create. Asher yarshiyu en Elokim, right? That's why the Rashba and the Yushami both say there's no chiyuv lotzei shidei shamayim when it comes to knasos, because there's no chiyuv knas until a bezdin is mechayev you. It's the famous Yushami where, I think Tevi's tooth was knocked out. Right, and the Yishami seems to say there's no chiyuv. You can't be meshachar him because unless a bezdin is mechayiv you, there's no chiyuv latzis de shemayim. So you can't say latzis de shemayim, I'll be meshachar him because you need a bezdin to mechayiv. So the question is, do you think the Rush is disputing that general principle here by saying that tfisa works on in kasas? How can you say that it's a din d'oraisa of avodah d'chinul nafshe if it never was a hamad of the din? Right? So it could be that he's limiting this to palga niska knasa again, and it's specifically with respect to palga niska knasa, which has aspects maybe of a chiyav mamon, then tfisa will work for the chatzi nezek. But for every other knas, the Rush would disagree and hold that tfisa would not work. I mean, what do you think? Do you think the implication here is that this is a general machlokas? Yeah, the context is just here in Tesvav, right? So context certainly would suggest limiting it, but he doesn't really say anything about limiting it. But if you don't want to say that the Rush is disagreeing with the general principle that a knas requires a hamad bedin, then he's disagreeing locally with respect to a palganiska knasa. And then it establishes that midaraisa, there's a claim, even if there's no hamad bedin here. So it's very much in line with Raivit's position. Okay, so in the last section here, so those are the three clearest rayas to distinguish palganiska knasa from shar knasos. So A, the Raivit's point that Modi B'Knas Pater wouldn't apply here. Maybe B, the point Machlokas between the Rambam and the Meiri, that this Knas would be Shaykh to Ketanim. And this position of the Rush, that Tfisa would work for this Knas, even though Tfisa wouldn't work for Shar Knasos. So the last thing I want to discuss is the Gemara's principle of ain't done in dine knasas bibavel. Right, so the Gemara said, if, once we say palga niskas knasa, lo magvinan bibavel. So the Gemara says, vitafas lo magvinan mine. So machogas in the Rush and the Yadarma, whether that's a takana or meikar din daraisa. Vi amar kabo kivuli zimna da zina la ardi Yisrael kavinan le. If he wants to adjudicate the case with mumchin in Eretz Yisrael, so then we set up a court case in there to throw, and they travel there to adjudicate. V'i lo azil mishamtinan le. ובין כך ובין כך משמתין עלי עד המסל לכזיק המדרב נוסן. So I want to just analyze for a few minutes what's this din of Ein Danan Dinei Knosos Bebavel and what the exceptions to that rule are. Well? Well? What do you think we discussed? So we have we discussed why Pavla Niska Knosa may be an exception to the rule. But what are the exceptions to the general principle of Ein Danan Dinei Knosos Bebavel, not specifically Pavla Niska Knosa? So let me just point out that already the Gemara itself seems to recognize that even if Ein Danan Dinei Knosos, Ben Kach Uben Kach Mishamtin Le Ad Mesale Kezeka. So what do you make of that? I mean, what's that power based off of? What distinction does that suggest? So let me just, you should notice, machlokas, seems to be machlokas rishonim as to what exactly the mishamtin le adam esale kezeka is. Rashi says very strongly, mishamtin le laharog esakele vesachatul. Right, you put him in cherem until he actually kills the dangerous animal. The Rambam and the Meiri both have weaker formulations, ad sheyasir hezeko, until he does something to neutralize the nezek.
Yeah, and the Mishnayis.
Yeah.
Elisakin.
Right.
Yeah.
So it could be like this is a parallel machlokas. Yeah, it's possible they're just arguing about what the proper method for being mesalik the nezek is. Yeah, it could be that there's maybe it could be means it means the same thing, but the question is actually Har game seems much more strict. I don't think much turns on this machlokas, though you might say it's just it's really a machlokas. So what's the distinction it sounds here that Gemara is drawing an important distinction between compelling somebody to pay tashlumin, that you can't do bebavel, but to ex ante prevent somebody from causing nezek, that certainly falls within the jurisdiction of a bezin, even within bavel. So, to prevent nezek, that's like that social good is within the jurisdiction of even dayane bavel. But to penalize somebody ex post for nezek that's caused, then that falls outside of the jurisdiction of bavel. We saw a parallel distinction in the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayis when it came to Ketanim. Even though the Mishnah Nachovel said that Cherishot Vikatan Pgiyasan Ra, the Rambam said that the Bezin could be Makin and take steps to ex ante prevent them from causing Nezak. So it does sound like there's this fundamental distinction always between Makin versus compelling Tashlumin. And we'll see something analogous in a few moments. Now, you might say that partially the machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam is exactly what steps can be taken even to prevent. So Rashi sounds much stronger, ad misali kezeka sheyahargim. It sounds almost that to prevent damages, you could even destroy the person's property. That almost sounds even, in some sense, that sounds stricter than just compelling tashlumin, right? So they can't compel the guy to pay for the damage that his shor causes, but you could compel him to kill the animal?
Very indirect compelling.
Well?
Very indirect compelling. Meaning? They can't go out and kill the animal, they just fairly
does. So you're saying it's not... the distinction that Gemara is drawing is not so much between preventing damages and compelling compensation. The Gemara's distinction is whether the Bezdin does it versus whether they just take some they use some social force to intimidate him into doing it.
Right. I mean, or whether Bezdin can rule on moderation versus whether they can rule on social issue. Okay.
So you're saying the real distinction that Gemara has in mind is the real distinction is between Chirem and Kfiya B'mamon. That's the Gemara's distinction.
Right.
Yeah, so what do you make of Isaac's point? It's a very, very important point. See what he's saying? So I was initially reading the Gemara as saying that there's a distinction between compelling Tashlumin for damages and taking preventative measures to block the Nezek from happening in the future. That's what the Gemara has in mind. So Lesalik Hezeka, you could take even extreme steps, like Rashi says, La Haroges Abehema. But to compensate a victim, B'dieved, the Bezin has no jurisdiction. That's how I read the Gemara. Isaac's saying, well, maybe the Gemara is getting at a different point, that to be Kofe Mamon, the Bezin has no jurisdiction, but to employ social means to encourage some sort of result, that the Bezin could do to whatever extent they would like. That's your point, Isaac? So, good. What do you guys think about who's right about that? So is the Gemara's emphasis here on Benkach u'Benkach Mishamtinan Lei, or is it on Ad Mesali Kezeka? Nafkamina is, can the Bezin go and kill the animal themselves? Right? Does that fall in within their jurisdiction? And the Gemara should have just said that.
Give like the full force of the Bezin's power.
Like Benkach u'Benkach Mesalkin Hezeka. Right, just go do it directly. Sinanama Mosa, right? Minadino so achi yasir hezeko. It sounds like the Bezin wouldn't be able to kill it on their own. Although if you read that Rambam Perish HaMishnayis, when it came to Ketanim, the Rambam in Achovel, which we saw in the Ketanim Sugya, the Rambam said the Bezin could be makin the Ketanim directly, the Cherishot of the Ketanim directly to prevent them from causing Nezek. Right, so there it sounds like as a preventative measure, you don't even need to utilize the Nidoi. So I guess you could say the Nidoi in the Gemara is Lav Dafka on that read. Liad, what do you want to say?
Is that Rambam talking about Lav Dafka?
No.
No, that's
preemptive. Well, it's preemptive. Does anybody have
that? Preemptive, there might be a difference between a knas which Bezdin can't do and their general power of having their own ship, which they want, even if they
can't. Yeah, so who has the Mishnah? Anybody have the Ram? Do you have the Ram Perish Mishnah in Achovel? Yeah, with Isaac? Or it's in the Ketanim source sheet. You can just pull it up. Have it or?
Where is it?
It's in the Katan one. Let's see if I can pull it up also. It's in Perish Mishnayis in Chovel. Oh, here it is. Bottom of page 17, top of 18. So, Kolze Pashut, that's the Yasan Ra. Aval Yesh Ledayin Lahakosa Maka Rabba Kidei Limnoa Hanizokin Mipnei Adam. Right, but the point is you could even take like
physical methods of coercion to prevent nezek ex ante.
Sure, but you're not thinking of a procedure over here. You're just saying, oh, well, if a basin can do something really bad, like physical force, then obviously they can do it nuts. My point is procedurally, it's very different to say that a court has the authority to issue a stop of knots versus saying a dayan can do what he needs to like protect society.
Right, but I'm saying you might have said the Vidra of Nasan is the same idea, right? It's the Bezin could kill the animal Hamazik, Kedela Sali Kazeka.
I'm saying, yeah, understood, but there might be a difference between the Bezin enforcing the Knas of killing animals in, this, in all cases of this.
Right, but it's not a Knas, that's just Kedela Sali Kazeka. It's preemptive in the same way that this Rambam is.
That's true. Okay, go ahead.
So. Isaac, what do you think of the relationship between them?
I agree that an Amr just sounds like a friend of an
Amr. Right, in which case, there's no reason why Argamar should be limited to Nidoi. Right? Right, I'm saying, but once you have this principle, there seems no reason to think that Lasali Kazeka should be limited to a means of Minoi, of Nidoi. Right, you'd have to say something like that. Yeah, you see within this Rambam is that even though you can collect tashlumin from a katan, yishla dayan lakos and makaraba kadilam noah hanizakin. So it sounds like you have much greater powers to prevent nezek ex ante than you do to compensate for nezek ex post.
And that's if they're short going out, not if they're coming in.
No, so this is the begufam.
It's the begufam?
Yeah. So I'm saying maybe that's what the Gemara is getting at on Tess Vav, that even though the Bezin doesn't have powers to enforce compensation, they have powers to larogesa behemah, you know, once they know it's dangerous. Isaac's reading the Gemara differently. He's saying the Gemara is really distinguishing between using a nidui to get to the result versus
right.
The bezin going directly.
And you're, what you're saying is like a call home air. If you could hit them, if you could hit their bodies, you could definitely kill their animals.
Something like that. Or same idea. Not even call home, but it's similar principle. So I want to develop Isaac's position here. That's what we have in the next source, the next discussion. So the Rosh in our Gemara quotes the Ravid, who seems to extend the Gemara's principle. But Ravid kasav yafal gav de lo magvinan ha'idna knasos. So even though nowadays we don't enforce knasos, amar rabbanan demishamtinan le ad demifayis leniza kiros bezdin. So the Ravid says that, look, nowadays, even though ain't done in Dine Knossos, nevertheless, we could put somebody in Cherem until they pay up the Knoss. So that suggests that Isaac's distinction seems to be correct, or at least that the Ravid agrees with Isaac's distinction, that the Bezdin can enforce Dine Knossos so long as they do so indirectly, through the mechanism of a Nidoi. Now, you might have said that, you'll see this first phrase, I think, you might say, Dimishamtinale ademifayes leniza kiros Bezdin, that's not done Dine Knossos because maybe you're not enforcing the amount of the knas. It's really just compelling payment until there's pious. That's what you could have said from this first phrase. But from the hemshich, it sounds like v'im yesh kitzva min haTorah kechamishim shel ones mefata ad yoyevoso kitzva. It sounds like the Ravid is comfortable with enforcing even the exact amount of the knas shel Torah. Well, the shear in the pious case may be different from the...
It's not about preventing damage happening again in the future. It's just about getting some sort of compensation for the damage that happens, even if it's not
for men. So you're saying that this shows what? This shows that it's compensatory, not deterrent? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying that it shows that the power, that the point that what the Gemara is trying to establish here is that the power of residence is in using this indirect means.
Right. Well, for sure, that's why the Ravid's interesting, because he's saying that That's why I'm bringing in the Raivit. So why is that? Because it's only Mishamtin on Adim Mephayis?
Yeah, it's not about paying back for past damages.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's what I'm saying. I don't see any evidence that this is more compensatory paying back for past damages. All I see is that the amount is the amount that's going to be Mephayis Lenizak. I don't know how that correlates to deterrent versus compensation. Now look how the Rush is upset with this. So the Rush disagrees. Says Velo Nihira, Deha Amrinan Delo Mishamtinan Ela Iazmene Ladina Eretz Yisrael Velo Bayazil. He says you don't see that at all in the Gemara because the Gemara only talked about putting you in Cherem to go to Eretz Yisrael. It didn't talk about putting you in Cherem until you pay the amount in question. Veo Dila Dvarav Hare Govin Dine Knasas Bibavel. The Ein Lecha Govina Gedola Mizu. Right, you're putting this guy into a very vulnerable position. You're putting him in chirim, where he has no choice but to cough up the amount of the knas. That violates ain't done in dinei knas bebavel. So it sounds like maybe the Raivid and the Rush are disagreeing over exactly this point. The Raivid seems to hold, so long as the Bezdin's means are indirect, so long as they're utilizing a nidoy to get to the payment, so then it's not in violation of Dan and Dine Knas Bebavel. And the Rush disagrees. The Rush thinks that so long as you're enforcing somehow the result of paying the Knas, you are in violation of Ein Dan and Dine Knasos. So it seems... Or like, how would you say that this? How would you explain this machlokas?
What are they arguing about? What are they arguing about when they argue over whether compelling compensation through a nidui is a violation of Ein Dan Dine Knas Bebavel?
Saying is knas just like the actual payment, or is knas even? I mean, you're saying maybe the knas is the fact that it's an interesting point. I didn't think of that. I mean, you're saying maybe the knas here is not just the payment, but the knas is the liability for the action.
Yeah,
right?
Because then you're still on the hook, basically still making your payment.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting. You see, everybody hear Shlomo's point? He's saying maybe they're arguing over as to like what's included in the knas. Is the knas just the monetary amount, or is the knas like the liability for the wrongdoing? In which case, right, even putting somebody in cherem for being mazik would be a violation of Ein Dan Dine Knas Bebavel. That's your point, right?
Better for me.
But that's yeah. I think that's what you're getting at. That's a very interesting idea, right? Because then you might say to put it into the idiom we've been using. Well, maybe any means of trying to deter the behavior ex post facto falls within enforcement of a knas. It doesn't matter whether knas is monetary compensation or this cheirim even. Yeah, I think that's a very nice suggestion. Sel, do you hear what he's saying?
Yeah.
Mask him? Not sure.
I think Mahalo is more about it.
Meaning, is using indirect means to.
Right. How much jurisdiction do
we have? So I would say slightly differently. I would say maybe the machlokas here is about what's the reason for Ein Dan Dine Knasos Bebavel. And whatever that reason is it violated through using indirect means to extract the knas? Anybody have a suggestion of what that might be? So I just think that one way of explaining this is based off what the reason for Ein Dan Dine Knasos Bebavel is. So I'll try to flesh that out in a few minutes. But for example, you might think that the reason for Ein Dan Dine Knosset BeBavel is just a din in Kavod Mumchen. And then you might say, so long as it's Nikar that the Bezin has to use these other means to extract the result, then it's not a violation of the Kavod Mumchen in Eretz Yisrael. Because there's a clear difference between the powers that the Mumchen have against the non-Mumchen. One could utilize direct means, and one has to resort to circuitous means to extract the Knas. So if you think that the idea here is like Mitam Kavod Mumchen, then maybe you could explain why the mere fact that you're using the tool of Nidui to extract the result is not a violation of Ein Dan Dine Knas BeBavel. But we'll get to that in 2 minutes. Sorry, Jonah. So let me just build off this Machlokes in the Raivan and the Rush. If you look at the Rif citing the Gaonim, this is the Rif in Hachovel, in Daf Lamed and Daf Arif, Pei Dalid off the Gemara. So he quotes the whole long Gemara there of Ein Dan Dine Knas BeBavel. And he quotes the Minog Shte Yeshivo, She'afa pi she'ein govin knas bebavel, Minadin oso ad mefayis le labal dine. V'chad yoyev le shir mai dechazi le mesav le, Sharu le la alter, Bein efayis mare dine, bein lo efayis. So this is very similar to what we saw in the Ravid. Except that in the Rif, according to the Minhag Shtei Yeshivos, so there's less of an emphasis on actually being mefayis lebal dine, and more of an emphasis on giving an amount that's roi lefayso. Right, so it's not actually that you put them in cheirim until they arrive at some agreement between each other. It's just the Bezin exerts a kind of a pressure until he pays some sort of pious amount. Now, the Rosh again in Achovel takes issue with this. He says, "V'efshar shetakana sagonim hu, aval midina de gemara lo mashmahachi." Again, de imkein ein lechol gavayna gedola mizu, the same objection he raises against the Ravid. And then he says, here he makes a diak from the second half of the Gemara. "V'chein mashma de mishamtina le ad misalik hezeka midrab nasan, aval mishum tashlumin lo mishamtina le." So here he kind of disagrees with Isaac's diak. Isaac's diak is that what's permissible is using the nidui to extract the result. And he's saying, no, no, no. You see, the Gemara only allows you to use a nidui to extract sila kezeka. The Gemara doesn't allow you to use a nidui to extract monetary compensation. So you see, there's this fundamental machlokes about whether a nidui will work to extract the compensation of a knas. Now, if you look at the Rush in Hachovel, so in the 8th parak, so he quotes a string of tshuvos agonims. And these tshuvos also run with the idea that you could use nidui to extract knas. But here it sounds like their reasons are slightly different. It's not the fact that you're using a circuitous means, but something else. Let's take a look at the formulation. So the Rashi writes, "B'tshuvas agonim nisham mar tzamach gon elu naros sheyesh lem knas mahu lahagvos bebavel kidei shelo yehe chotei niskar." So notice he thinks that the reason to collect these knasos is kidei shelo yehe chotei niskar. So how do you understand that? What's the force of Shleye Chotei Niskar? Does he mean that it's distinct from what the real Mechayiv of the Knas is? V'heshev klal amru, ein magvin knas bebavel, ela mishum Shleye Chotei Niskar v'Shleye Yubisrael prutzim benizakim. Shekivan sheyodim she'en govin knas bebavel, sholchan yad zeh bezeh, Nagu chacham machornam lenadosam ad sheyefaisu b'mamon ad sheyarba lavreim b'yefaisena b'dvarim. So he's saying, look, just, there's got to be some way of holding people accountable for these different kinds of nizakim. So they put him in chirim ad sheyefaisu b'mamon. Oh, ad sheyarba lavreim b'yefaisena b'dvarim. Notice that here, the Gaonim don't even require a pious of Mamon. Right? They would hold it sufficient that there'd be some sort of just pious Dvarim. Okay. Maisa be'echad shehipil sheno shel chaveiro v'nidehu marav tzadokon. Okay, so there's a story where somebody knocked out his friend's tooth. So that's a chavala, and sounds from the Gemara in Hachovo that we're not done these kinds of knasos bebavel, this kind of chaval bebavel, because it's a milsa de l'shchicha. So Rav Tzadokon said, "V'amar lo davar katzav eini chotech alecha." I'm not going to obligate you to pay a specific amount. Lech ufaiso obedvarim obemamon. V'yachshav kol dine knasos betelin. So, how do you understand this tshuva? How does he reconcile the Ein Dan and Dine Knasos with him obligating him to pay the Nezek for the eye?
That's how you sort of explain the riff. He's not making you pay the Knas. It's not the Rukatsu, the Torah says. It's
good. Good. Here it sounds, contrary to the way the Rush side of the Ravid, there it sounded like it's about using a Nidui versus going straight into his assets, Kofin B'mamon. Here, the emphasis sounds like Ein Dan Dine Knasos means we can't make you pay the exact amount, but we could compel you to pay some general monetary compensation. That's different from the exact amount that the Torah would require. Right, so Dine Knasos are betalin, but so Davar Katzav Eini Chotech Alecha, but we could compel you to Lefaisa B'mamon. That's also explicit in the next tshuva that he quotes here from Rav Nachshon Noy Gaon. V'nishal mimar Rav Nachshon Noy, I ein don in dine knasos bebavel achova b'chaver b'zman hazek yon tsurim ozno kata rosh chutmo o echad me'evarav ma yase b'oso achovel. Heishiv, kach aminak b'shtei yeshivo, shekol mi shachova b'chaver o b'eino o b'sheino o b'echad me'evarav, af al pi she'ein poskin din alav l'shalim d'me'eino o d'me'sheino, v'adai minadin oso ad she'efais oso b'en mu'ad b'en harbeh. So there are no clear specifications on the amounts, but they could obligate him to be mefayis. And then here again, so Rav Shira acknowledges that in general the koach nidui is limited to lasali kazeka, but still holds some chucham machronim rosh yeshivos kiro hefsed gadol mishum dein don and dine knasos. And here's the rationale. It would have been a violation of Dine Knasos to specify the amount. So same idea. So long as you don't get to the Shir Katsiv, you're not in violation of Ein Dan Dine Knasos Bebavel. Does anybody have any comments on this? So it sounds like there are two reasons, there are two ways to get around Ein Dan Dine Knasos. Either you go through Nidui, or you make the amounts not correspond to the exact amount of the Knas, but at least a sufficient amount that the Nizok could be appeased, and it would block Shlo Yehei Chotei Niskar. That's what you get from this rush. Yeah, do you have thoughts on it?
Not really.
No?
A little sticky.
What?
A little sticky.
Yeah, it sounds a little sticky, right? Yeah. So, why is the stickiness not a problem? Well,
you gotta do something.
You gotta do something? Yeah. Jonah, you have thoughts on this?
Use the same
chat
you said before,
I mean, if it's just about kavod, then it makes makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
Because as long as you distinguish this adjudication from what the mumchin are empowered to do, then it's not an infringement on their kavod. Right. That's the... By definition, a knas is a set amount.
Right.
And these are just like some other extrajudicial powers that Bezdin has. That's like another way of explaining this. Yeah. But that sounds a little sticky, right? It's like, we're not going to do the knas, but we'll do something that's, you know, very similar to the knas. Just through a different means.
Okay.
Just, you're saying it's just symbolically to distinguish it from a knas, to show that it comes from the separate powers that the Bezdin has.
Not similar,
right. Even though just the amount looks similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to spend the last 5 minutes on so just looking at the principle of Shlichu Sayhu and when we extend Shlichu Sayhu, and another way of getting around the problem of Ein Dan Dinei Knas B'Bavel. So the Gemara in Achovel. So the Gemara in Achovel has a long discussion about what things are adjudicated in Bavel and what aren't. The Gemara says that knasos are not done in Bavel. Same thing for milsa de lo shchicha and a milsa de ein bo chisaron kis. Those are the three categories ain't done in Bavel. That comes out of this Gemara on page Dalid Amid Aleph. The Gemara at one point says, well, maybe the reason for these is that because we don't have the expertise. The Gemara rejects that because it says, well, just look at the shuk and figure out how much a person is sold on the shuk for with a hand and without a hand, so you don't need a lot of expertise to figure that out. Same thing for a shor, just figure out the market value of a shor. You don't need a special kind of expertise for it. So the Gemara rejects that, and the Gemara just falls on this general idea that we only do shlichu sayu for mamonis, not knasos, and even then only when it's a milsa de shchicha v'yeshbo chisaron kis. So it sounds like in general the Rishonim agree that me'ikar adin, you require mumchin for most dine mamonis. That's clear from the first parak of Sanhedrin, Shir Arshiyun Elohim. The Gemara in the first parak of Sanhedrin already has a special heter for hodos v'halvos that you don't require mumchin. It's sufficient to have hediotos, a gzeira shlo tinel delas pifne lovin. The sense you get from the Gemara in Bava Kamma on Pei Dalid is that a similar heter of hediotos is applied for anything that's a milsa de shchiach v'yesh bo chesron kis for the same idea, mishum tikkun olam. It would just be crazy if you couldn't adjudicate these very basic and common cases that cause monetary loss. Rashi, by the way, says that the reason why we don't do shlichu sayhu, so for all those things, for milsa de shchicha v'yesh bo chesron kis, we apply the principle of shlichu sayhu and say that even hediotos could adjudicate them because they're serving as the shluchim of the mumchen. Rashi and Sanhedrin and Daf Yud Gimel suggest that knasos is not a separate category. Knas is just a subset of milsa de lo shchicha v'yesh bo chesron kis. That's this Rashi and Sanhedrin Yud Gimel. Now you get the further sense that the principle of shlichu sayhu is applied to all cases where there's a serious social need to have cases adjudicated. So for example, the Rashban Gittin on Pechesa Mebez says that when it comes to Gittin, we'll apply shlichu sayhu. So even though you require mumchin, only mumchin could coerce a get, the Gemara in Gittin suggests that hediotos could do this based off shlichu sayhu, and the Rashba there explains the ilo minasva and the gavri v'havlu benos yisrael agunos, that the concern of mishum aguna is sufficient to allow us to utilize the principle of shlichu sayhu to allow hediotos to enforce Gittin. The Yad Rama in Sanhedrin Dav Gimel has a similar formulation, not with respect to Gittin, but he says that the takana to allow hediotos to adjudicate all cases of milsa de shchicha v'ispo chisaron kis is mepnei tikkun olam. You just have to have these basic cases decided. Tosos in Yevamos on Memvavim base extends this idea to cases of Gerim. He says, Miikra din, you require Mumchin to approve a conversion. But he says, V'yesh lomar, but Bizman is that we can still do it, Tashlichu Sayu Avdinan. U'kimo she'chashu lin ilas delas b'fnei lovin, chashu nami lin ilas delas b'fnei Gerim. So you can see the same principle that we're concerned about not allowing creditors to recover their loans. We're also concerned about not having Gerim convert. And the Ran in Gittin on Testament Beis also has the extension to Gerus. Just that Lahachnis Adam Tachas Kanfei Ashchina Afagav Delo Shchiach Adif Tvei Mimimona De Shchiach. It sounds like here the social need is so strong, that will apply the principle of shlichusayu in this case as well. So, look, the general rule seems to be miyigra din, you require mumchen, but whenever there's extreme pressure to get these cases decided or approved, then we can employ the principle of shlichusayu. So, in the Gemara, it's cases of hodas valvos. It's also cases of milsa deshchicha ve'ispo chisaron kis. It's cases of gittin, and also cases of Gerim. And all out of the same basic principle. So you see, it's not something magical about a milsa d'shchicha. The real principle seems to be based off what the Yad Rama says, that's mishum tikkun olam. Kadesh lo tinol delas bifnei lovin, or chshash av nilas delas bifnei Gerim, or as the Rashba says, mishum aguna, chshash that these women won't get remarried. Now the further question is, well, what's the nature of shlichusayhu such that we could apply it in cases where there's a strong need? So here the Rishonim seem to have different views. There's a very famous position of Rabbi Baruch HaSvardi in HaChovel, and he says that we could apply the principle of Shlichus Sayu in these cases. Tekivan she'ein bo davar she'nechadesh midatenu havale ki'ilu hein poskin hadin v'shilcho mohotzi. That since these cases are so basic, it's a milsa d'shchiach, I guess, so there's no novel considerations. So it's as if just the Bezin and Yerushalayim paskins the case, and these Batei Dinim in Bavel are applying it.
Pretty sketchy.
What?
Pretty sketchy.
Why is it sketchy?
Because the whole smart of needing Mumchen, presumably is a lack of authority, not like a lack of ability to deal with stuff. So they're just saying, oh, well, it's like as if it's already done or possible. It's like, still, you're the one who's an effort. It's still the lack of authority.
Right,
this answer is explaining why you have the reliability, the knowledge, the capability. Oh, well, they're just doing what everybody else has done, they're present or whatever.
Right.
But that doesn't seem to be a problem with lack of.
Well, you might say that you're acting on their authority then, right? So it's like their authority which already decides the case.
But if that's the case, why is it matter Shima, Zabasha, and Chai? The focus on that is Chidish.
So you only need authority when there's, you're exercising your own authority.
But that's not true. When you appeal to legal authority, it doesn't matter how innovative or law.
Right.
Don't have authority or jurisdiction, you don't.
Right. So you're saying this makes it seem less like
unless maybe the Rabbi Tzardi has some weird conception of smicha, where smicha really is ability to be a
dyer. Yeah. Saying here it sounds more like expertise.
Yeah, maybe.
Don't think the jurisdictional issue could be satisfied by
you don't need expertise.
Yeah. Also, this only explains why milsa d'shchicha doesn't really explain chesron kis.
Also true, yeah.
Right, because those cases might be, just complicated or complex and not have the same kind of precedent. Well,
that's what you have to say. You have to say, oh, chesron kis inherently is more complicated than
that. Right, but this does point to some sort of fundamental chisaron, right? I mean, whether it's the authority issue or the expertise issue, it's saying that. You can only use shlichusayu in limited cases where you're not making substantive decisions.
Yeah.
Right? The Ran seems to, this is the Ran at the beginning of Sanhedrin, has a different explanation for Sichus Ayu, and he says that the real issue seems to be kavod of Kisron Shel Mumchin. Anybody remember this? Anybody remember this, Ron? So the Ron at the beginning of Sanhedrin says that Ve'ein koach b'chacham levatel zeho inyan v'hu litol kisran shel mumchin. Right? What allows the hedyotos to use the, you know, the keser of mumchin? And he says the Gemara's answer is v'tir zod shlichu sayu kav dinan v'heim shenasnu koach ladin b'hedyotos heim atzman mochlu kvodan al zeh. The principle of shlichu sayu is that in these kinds of cases where there's a need to decide the disputes, so then we know that the mumchin are mochel on their kavod, because you're viewing the hedyotos as the shluchim of the mumchin. So that suggests that the problem, you require shlichus ayu only to surmount the kavod problem with that there's a din that hedyotos have to be mechabed the role of mumchin, and that prevents them from deciding cases that should be sent to the mumchin. So there might be an interesting nafkamina here. So if you hold the problem is just mitam, there might be an interesting nafkamina between holding whether the problem is mitam kavod versus the problem being more substantive, like the Baruch HaSvardi says, either in liad sense, that it's just a expertise problem, or even if you take the Baruch HaSvardi as making the more fundamental point that they don't have the power to coerce people under their authority. So the Kiryas Sefer in Hilchos Sanhedrin Parakeh talks about a case where there are no mumchin around at all. So like this Man Hazeh, where nobody has smicha. In the times of the Gemara, so you had at least in Eretz Yisrael there was smicha, and just in Bavel they didn't have. What happens nowadays when no one has smicha? So the Kiryas Sefer, the Mabit, argues, V'chein afilu b'smicha, this is the Mabit in Sanhedrin Parakeh, and he says, afilu below smicha near the midaraisa done in dayane chutzlaretz afilu bedavar she'ena matzoi bedine eretz divizman she'en smicha kulan shavin v'akol holech achar achachma. So the Mabit here holds that bizman that there are no mumchin at all, so there's no distinction between hedyotos and mumchin, and akol is holech achar achachma. So the Chora, that really only makes sense on the view that the issue is a kavod issue. Right, so if there are no mumchin, then there's no problem for the hedyotos, the people without smicha, to be done. But if you think the problem is that you need smicha, ish mi pi ish, mi pi Moshe Rabbeinu, to have a jurisdiction or to have the power to compel somebody to listen to you, then it doesn't really make sense that the mere fact that there are no mumchin in Eretz Yisrael is sufficient to give you jurisdiction to enforce certain decisions. So I thought this is like a good way of arguably explaining, as Isaac points out, why you might think that if the Bezin is just exercising powers through Nidoy, or even without Nidoy, it's just enforcing a collection that's not exactly Dine Knossos, that's sufficient to overcome the problem of Ein Dan and Dine Knossos Bibavel. Like this Kiryas Sefer and Ran idea, that the important thing is that there be a distinction between Mumchen and Hedyotos, then you might say that Nidui and Kedei Lefaiso preserve the distinction. And the powers of the Hedyotos and Chutz La'aretz are just Mishum Tikkun Olam, and that's reflected in the limitation of their powers to Nidui versus Nidui and Kedei Pius. There's one final Mar Makom that I just want to bring to your attention. So in Siman Aleph in Choshe Mishpat, that's where the Mechaber Paskins, all these distinctions about Mumchen and Hedyotos and Milsa de Lashicha, Knossos. So the Piskei Tshuva there has an interesting suggestion. So in Siman Aleph, Sif Gimel. So Ayin B'Sha'ar Mishpat Shein Estapek Im Kiblu Aleihem Dayanim Ladun Lahem Dinim Elu She'ein Danim Bizman Hazeh Imahani HaKabbalah Kimo Demahani B'Dinin She'danim Bizman Hazeh Im Kiblu Aleihem Karav Apostle Ayin Yesh Lechalik. What's his suffix?
judges not have any sikha, if they're not trustworthy, they don't really have the authority to do something well on the Kabbalah than myself, so then if they might be able to
Difference
about Kabbalah, then I have the right stuff.
Yeah, arguably, right. So the more you think that if the issue here is one about jurisdiction, as Liad put it, meaning what gives somebody a right to assert his authority over you? So if someone is musmach ishmi pi Moshe Rabbeinu, then he has a right to assert his authority. But if he's not, then he has no right to assert himself over you. So if that's the problem with Hedyotos, then it makes a lot of sense, like the Shaar Mishpat is suggesting, that Kiblu Alei would work to allow the Dayan to Dan Dine Knossos even. Right? So if like these parties in Bava went to a Dayan and said, oh, we want you to decide the case no matter what, then he has a right to impose Dine Knossos because he has authority by virtue of the Kabbalah of the Bali Din. And so he has a suffix here whether this would be like Asher Yarshia Es Atzmo. It's almost like Moda Beknas because he gave authority to the Dayan to decide the case. Maybe that's like Prat Lamarshia Es Atzmo. That's part of his suffix. He quotes the Shaar Mishpat, that's part of his suffix here. Sorry, very sharp suggestion. In the brackets in the Pesachei Tshuva, they quote the Beis Yehuda, who holds that Kabbalah would work. And that I think that suggests that the issue here is really just one of authority. The Dayan doesn't have authority over you, but if you're Mekabel Olav, then maybe he can be done Dinei Knossos. Now, you might say something similar to the case of Nidui. You might say that to be Kofeb Dinei Mamon, that requires a certain kind of authority to actually be Motzi Mamon from someone. But simply to employ social coercion to extract the result, that doesn't really require any kind of authority. I think that's a possible suggestion also. Because like the authority itself is only, like the authority only inheres in actually being Yorwid Lenachasav and being Motzi Mama. But just employ a Nidoy, that's already not an exertion of authority. It's taking having recourse to social pressure to persuade a person to agree on his own. So there's like a nice support for this position of the Pischei Tshuva and the Shaar Mishpat that Kiblu Alei would work to be done Dine Knossos Bebavel. So Tos the Rosh and Gittin on Pechesim and Beis. So he's talking about Shlichu Sayu there. And he says, so he quotes Tosus's question. Tosus has this question, how is it that the Gemara has so many cases where we appear to be dan dine gzela, even though gzela, the Gemara seems to suggest, is a case of lo shchicha and shouldn't be dan bebavel. So Tosa says, well, if gzela is a case of milsa de lo shchicha and ain't dan bebavel, why do we have so many cases in the Gemara that seem to be cases of adjudicating gzela bebavel? So look at his answer. This is the Tosfos Rosh's answer in Gittin Peches for how it is that you have cases of Dine Gzela and the Gemara B'Bavel. Just tell me what you think he's saying. And again, he's citing our Gemara on Tesvav.
Maybe every single case in Bava Kamma is talking about a Tapas case or you had it from there as
well.
In which case you would be able to.
Well, the first Tfisa case, yeah. So we don't know. Tfisa case is not interesting, right? Maybe it was only a case of Tfisa, and they had to be done. The Knossos only post facto of the Tfisa. The Azmanei Leretz Yisrael part is very interesting. So he says maybe the cases where the Gemara is done Dine Knossos Bebavel are cases of Azmanei Lemeya La'arad Yisrael, the Iloaz Mishamtin Alei, then Nisratzeh Shenidonu Oso Kan. So that, you see what he's saying? He's saying maybe all the cases in the Gemara are cases where they were mazman him l'aretz Yisrael under threat of nidui. The litigant said, look, I don't want to schlep to Eretz Yisrael. So they both agreed to adjudicate the case in Bavel. That's how they were done, the milsa de lo shchicha in Bavel. So that seems to support the analysis of the Pischei Tshuva, that if there's a Kabbalah, if he accepts the jurisdiction of that Beis Din, then they could be down Dine Knossos. Does everybody see that? Because since he willingly decided not to go to Eretz Yisrael and stay in Babel, so that gives that Beis Din the koach to be down the case. So I think that works very nicely with it being just either, you know, a covet issue or, well, I don't know about a covet issue, this more being an authority issue. So only the Bati Din Eretz Yisrael have that authority, but if the Nidon is willing to accept the Beis Din here, then that would work to be done Dine Knossos. Okay, that's what I wanted to cover from this sugya. Next sugya is the sugya on Yud Zayin of Basar Meikar, Basar Lebasof Azlinah.